There are more than 5 million acres of wetlands in Wisconsin, and today we're kind of going about uncovering the story of how many of these wetlands were formed. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you with us. We're also going to talk about the annual Wisconsin Wetland Science Conference as well with our guests. And one of the guests with me in the studio, Katie Belfus, is back with us. She's the outreach programs director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. And Katie, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
So great to be here. Thanks, Larry.
With us as well by phone is Nelson Hamm, a professor of geology and environmental science in St. Norbert College in De Pere. Nelson's going to be presenting at this year's conference about wetlands and the late ice age. He'll be talking about wetlands in the late ice age. Nelson Hamm, welcome. Thank you for joining in.
Thanks so much for having me on the show. Looking forward to it.
Looking forward to having you with us. So as we listen to these two experts, I hope you'll join in. Do you live near a wetland? Maybe you have one on your property. What do you want to know about? Maybe how it came to be. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Katie, let's start with you. When's the conference this year?
The conference is February 20th to 22nd. We're going to be up in Green Bay, Ashwaubenon to be precise, at the Oneida Hotel and Convention Center there. And looking forward to it. It's the 29th annual conference that we've hosted.
That's a nice conference center. Yeah, that's a great place. And you kind of move that around.
We do. We deliberately move it to a different city every year in Wisconsin so that we can both be more convenient to different folks in our community from year to year, and also showcase and highlight wetlands and wetland conservation work that are happening in those different regions of the state. So it keeps it interesting.
And the theme this year?
The theme this year is great water. Great wetlands make great waters.
Ah, tell us more about
that. Well, without wetlands, wetlands are so important in our water cycle for keeping our waters clean and for providing habitat for a lot of the creatures that we might think of as water habitat folk, you know, fish and whatnot. But the wetlands are the estuaries, the places where a lot of the reproduction and the nursery happens for those species. And of course, up on the landscape, wetlands are those places on the landscape where nature intends water to go as it works its way through the watershed. So without healthy wetlands in our watersheds, we don't have healthy watersheds downstream. We don't have healthy water bodies downstream. So super, super important for the quality of our waters.
So if you're a first-timer attending the conference, what are you going to find? What can you expect to find?
You can expect to find 2.5 days of content about what's happening with wetlands, from the sort of 101 level, a very basic intro kinds of information, all the way through very complex ideas. We have two symposia happening at the conference this year, but workshops on plant identification, how to identify sedges, which is a very particular kind of plant, many of which grow in wetlands. We have an ash basket weaving workshop this year.
Oh, cool.
Because ash is a tree species that grows in wetlands. Unfortunately, we're losing a lot of those to emerald ash borer. That's a whole other show.
Yeah.
But we have someone coming in to teach us how to actually weave those baskets from ash.
So, and you have options, if I'm not mistaken, for people who can't attend the entire conference. You've got some flexibility.
We do. Yeah, we have a couple of things. First of all, the sort of kickoff evening, which is the Tuesday, February 20th, is our kickoff social and our very brief WWA annual membership meeting. So we invite anybody who's interested in learning more about the Wisconsin Wetlands Association to come out for that. It's free and open to the public and at that same Oneida Convention Center and Hotel. And then we also, historically, we've had a banquet that you and I have talked about, and we have dispensed with that this year in exchange for a more inclusive, more networking-friendly kind of event. So we're going to be having a barn dance and various other activities that will provide more opportunities for our guests and attendees to interact with one another. You know, the banquets were fabulous, but really you talk to the one person on either side of you at your table, and then you listen to somebody for about an hour. So it wasn't our people were hankering for some more interactivity. So that's why we're going to try something new this year. It also means that more people can come because a banquet is not a cheap thing to put on.
Yeah.
And we were also aware of the fact that we were excluding some folks from that experience because of the price. So we have something else there. But the other opportunity for folks who don't want to attend in person, we offer an on-demand registration option. We host an in-person conference, but we got good at putting together recordings of presentations and whatnot during the pandemic when we did hold the conference online. So we make all of those presentations available as recordings. And if you can sign up for that and listen to all of those presentations without having to leave the comfort of your own room.
Nelson Hamm, I want to turn to you. And just a reminder, Nelson's a professor of geology and environmental science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. And you'll be presenting at the conference, Nelson. You'll talk about the last ice age and geological events that happened thousands of years ago. How does knowing the history of our wetlands improve our understanding of the state's landscape today?
Well, that's a great question. I actually have two things I'm going to talk about in one presentation that really focus on the connections between wetland science and glacial geology, so the ice age geology of the state. One of those things is going to be what I call kind of the wetland glacial landform association or connection between those two. And it turns out that there's a very strong tie between those 5 million acres of wetlands that are still preserved today and the 10 million acres that existed before we started to drain wetlands starting in the mid-1800s. There's a very strong connection between the distribution and the types of wetlands and the type of glacial landscapes that they're in. What I think is fascinating is if you look at some of the oldest maps that were created showing wetlands in Wisconsin, and I'm thinking of one in my head right now from 1915, a glacial geologist looking at that map immediately would recognize the relationship between where most of those wetlands are and where the ice age, where the ice sheet advanced into and retreated from in Wisconsin. So to give you an idea, we have the least amount of wetlands in the Driftless area of southwest Wisconsin, which I'm sure many of your viewers have heard of. That really hilly region was, as far as we know, never glaciated. At least during the last couple of ice ages for sure, and it's had a long period of stream erosion that's taking place. And so for those of you that have driven, let's say, along the lower Wisconsin River Valley or any other part of the Driftless area, have noticed that most of that landscape is in the form of hillsides. So relatively small flat tops, relatively flat river bottoms, but the rest is really in slope, and that really good drainage is what prevents the formation of wetlands. On the other hand, if you're looking at the northern half of the state and the eastern half of the state, as a glacial geologist, if you compared that to an ice age map of Wisconsin, you would see the really obvious relationship between the two. The glacial landscape basically created the depressions in the landscape to create wetlands in places where the water table would have intersected those low points. And it's really kind of a fascinating thing to look at. And we're going to be looking at some of the most recent information on the glacial geology of the state and on wetland mapping to kind of show some specific examples of those relationships.
Pretty cool. How long ago was the late ice age, I guess we could call it, that you reference? I know you're referencing in your talks.
Sure. The last glaciation is actually called the Wisconsin glaciation throughout North America, believe it or not. So it's not just in our state that we use that term. They use it in Canada. They use it in other states around the United States. It's known as the Wisconsin glaciation mainly because in the 1800s, one of the early really famous glacial geologists of Wisconsin, T.C. Chamberlain, for which Chamberlain Hall is named on the campus, right? Did some of the really first detailed look at the glacial geology of the state and also proposed names that we would use to describe things. And the Wisconsin glaciation became the defining name for the last ice age. So a good question is, well, how long ago was that? It's complicated in the sense that the ice sheet that grew out of Canada during the last ice age and advanced through the Great Lakes into Wisconsin, it didn't just make one big pass into the state and then melted out of the state, never to come back. It was a really dynamic kind of environment where it made advances and then it retreated and then it advanced again. And that took place over almost a 15,000 year span, so probably starting around 30,000 years ago and just a little bit younger than about 15,000 years ago. We had glaciers affecting the state for that 15,000 plus year window.
That's a long time.
That's a long time ago.
Oh my goodness me. Well, I tell you, I've got some more questions, a lot more questions for you. And I know we got Chris in Milwaukee with a question and others as well. But, and I know Clara Neipert, our producer, is just dying to learn more. She was so excited about having you talk about the Two Creeks Buried Forest. And I know we're going to get to that as well. And we'll make that a little tease. We'll learn more about the Two Creeks Buried Forest, which has international excitement about. And we'll talk some more about the conference with our two guests, Katie Belfast and Nelson Hammond. Well, of course, we'll take your questions as well. We are going to take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be back with Katie Belfast and Nelson Hamm. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about the geologic formation of wetlands and the upcoming Wetlands Science Conference with our two guests, Nelson Hamm, Professor of Geology and Environmental Science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. Nelson will be presenting at this year's conference about the formation of wetlands. And back with us, been with us many times, over many a year, I think. Katie Belfast is the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Always great to have her come by, too. Have you attended the wetland conference before? Questions about wetlands or about the conference? Hope you'll join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234. Or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Chris in Milwaukee's been waiting a bit, so let's just go to Chris for Chris's thoughts. Hi, Chris.
Well, hello. I'm glad you're bringing this subject up. If we had conservation and civics taught in grade school like it was when I was a kid 90 years ago, they would have a better understanding of why it's so important. But you bring to mind that just about 30 years ago, there was a terrible battle for the wetlands. Adams County does not have any rules as far as the land, and Columbia County does. Well, Nestle's, Perrier Nestle's from Switzerland, that does not allow drilling for water in their country, came over and they bought 20 acres of land in Adams County. And then they proceeded to think they could drain the swamp. Well, on the other side of the road was Columbia County, and my father had given me 160 acres of wetland years ago, and he said, don't ever sell it or drain it. It's for the future. Well, water doesn't stop at a road. We sued them, and they brought their big boys over from Switzerland to battle it. And thanks to Ed Garvey and Arlene and Horatio Cano and my good brother-in-law and sister Don and Anita Nelson, we got the Republicans and the Democrats and the born-again Christians and the atheists in Adams County and Columbia County to forget about their differences. We all needed the water.
Oh, what my a story. Gosh. Chris, that's quite a story. She brings up all kinds of different points here, though. Chris, thanks for calling.
Well, you're absolutely right, Chris, that water does not obey our political boundaries, and that's so important. And so much of Wisconsin Wetlands Association work these days is really trying to get folks to look at the watershed, because as you said, Chris, what happens in one across one side of the road or one side of the political boundary affects everything around it. And so same goes with conservation and protection of wetlands. We need to look at what's happening in the entire watershed rather than just take a sort of opportunistic postcard, postage stamp approach to conservation. So that's really where our work is moving. And happy to say that our laws have tightened up a little bit in the last 50 years, and lots of counties are doing terrific work on behalf of wetlands, and we're trying to facilitate that.
Yeah, it was a good story, Chris. Mm-hmm. Thank you for telling us about it. Nelson Hamm, I want to turn back to you because Clara Kniper would just hit me over the head with a book or something if I didn't get to you to talk about the Two Creeks Buried Forest, which is part of your presentation at the Wetlands Conference. Right. Geologically, what's special about this present-day state natural area?
That's a great question, yeah, and we have to do this for Clara for sure. I'll say first that the Two Creeks Buried Forest has been known by geologists for over a century, but is probably far less known to other people around the state, but I know there would be great interest in it. And the fascinating thing is that it really, to understand what that forest what the significance is, means that you have to also draw in your knowledge from wetland science. And so this is just another example of a connection. So formally, it's a state natural area that's close to the tiny little town of Two Creeks, just north of Point Beach State Park. North of two rivers. And it's along the lakeshore. That little site preserves a part of the lake bluff. The story goes that at the turn of the last century, a geologist who was walking the shoreline, mapping old raised shorelines of Lake Michigan, saw a bunch of logs and stumps sticking out of the bluff well below the ground surface. So we're talking 10 or 20 feet below the surface. And even at that time, he recognized that must have represented a forest that was growing in northeast Wisconsin before the last advance of ice into the northeast part of the state. And so essentially what happened was around 13 to 14,000 years ago, and remember I told you that the glacier was very dynamic in the state. It would come and go and come and go. The ice retreated out of northeast Wisconsin, and the very first ice age forest began to grow in thousands of years because it was much, much colder before that time. So basically he was seeing the remnants of this ice age forest, and you could also see the soil zone. That was all very exciting, and he interpreted it in general correctly. Since that time, there have been many, many studies of that site, but that same buried wood has been found at many sites throughout northeast Wisconsin. And when, for example, a new road is being constructed, or most recently I saw a spectacular exposure of the trees in the Outagamie County landfill. When they were opening up a new cell, they had to excavate out, you know, a certain amount of dirt, and just by chance and lucky for us, they stopped in the excavation right about the level of where those buried logs are. And so it's really fascinating. So to go back, Goldthwaite first, as a geologist, found these logs and stumps. He recognized what it was. And then in the subsequent studies, people recognized that, for example, one thing is that most of the logs came from black spruce trees. And black spruce is not a particularly common tree in Wisconsin, even though we do have some. Where black spruce dominates the landscape is essentially the boreal forest that extends from one side of Canada all the way to the other and also covers all of central Alaska. So if you've got your thinking cap on in terms of what the significance of that is, basically a forest was here that was adapted to the cold conditions at the time. And then after the ice age, after the ice left the state, other tree species and plants and animals that are adapted more to our modern climate started to recolonize Wisconsin. That boreal forest basically left the state and was migrating to the north. and eventually basically covered most of Canada and Alaska. And that was kind of the significance of the site. Like I said, it's actually well-known in glacial geology circles. And even people from other countries around the world who are glacial geologists make a trip sometime to Wisconsin just to see this exposure. It's a fascinating spot. So what's the wetland connection? The wetland connection is really interesting. Not only are the trees preserved, but you often see the preserved forest floor. So maybe 6 to 8 to 12 inches of spruce needles and pieces of bark, even pieces of insects that lived on the forest floor. And in many places, people have also found moss, the mosses that were growing on the wet forest floor.
Wow.
Really perfectly, almost perfectly preserved, you know, in that layer. Those people who have looked at those mosses really carefully and also that soil zone have said that in many places, this was a forest that also was adjacent to wetlands. Mm-hmm. And in particular, which is kind of unusual, a type of wetland called a fen, which is basically a wetland where the water that's in the landscape, the groundwater that's percolating up, has a lot of dissolved minerals in it, and you usually get a really rich, diverse ecological environment in those cases. And so it really tells us not only when the glacier last re-advanced into the state, it tells us something about the wetland landscape that existed throughout northeast Wisconsin at the time.
Fascinating.
That is really fascinating.
History on the land. I love it.
History on the land. Boy, that's a great story, and I'm sure you're going to be expanding on that.
Can't wait to hear more.
At the conference, for sure. So thanks so much for giving. And now Clara will be happy with me.
Good.
Oh, my gosh. Katie, maybe you could talk. There are other presenters as well before we go back to the phones.
Yeah, well, our other keynote session happening the following day, Nelson's speaking on Wednesday, and the Thursday keynote is actually going to be a trio of folks who are going to talk together in a little bit more informal kind of a dialogue. We have Dr. Robert Howe, who was the founder of the Cochrane Center for Biodiversity at UW-Green Bay, Dr. Mandy Bennett, who's the new director, who because Robert has retired, and Amy Wolf, who's a professor at UW-Green Bay. And the three of them are going to engage in a conversation about the past in the area, what's happened to wetlands around Green Bay, what's happening now, and what can we look forward to in the future, and doing a little bit of a virtual tour of some of the coastal wetlands in the area as well. So really looking forward to that presentation. And then, of course, there's any number, there's something like 45 other talks being given by folks from across the state about work that they're doing and things they're researching.
In case I forget to do this later, how do people, if they wanted to sign up or participate, how do you do that?
Yep, you go to conference.wisconsinwetlands.org, and you can find all of the information there, including information about how to get registered. And you got to register by February 15th because that's when we got to start making name tags and stuff. So.
Oh, okay. So
you got 2 weeks. That's good.
Still got 2 weeks, but I wouldn't wait. I just probably better to do it now than later, for sure. Don in Bayfield County has something for us. Don, hi.
Hey, I got really lucky when I bought my land up here. I have no neighbors because all the property around me is designated DNR wetlands. Mosquitoes are great, and so are the frogs.
Well, Don got lucky.
That's a beautiful part of the state, and some very important wetlands, actually, up in Door County. I'm sorry, we're Bayfield County. I'm confused. There are also very important wetlands in Bayfield County. I apologize. There's some one of our Ramsar wetlands of international importance. We have six here in the state of Wisconsin. One of them is the Cahkagan and Bad River sloughs that's up in Bayfield County, where the Cahkagan River and Bad River empty into Lake Superior. Well, Shawamigan Bay, actually, but, you know, eventually Lake Superior.
Don, you're in a good place. I've got some property in Bayfield County. I'm with you. I like it a lot there. Speaking of that area of the state, Ralph in Hayward emailed us and wonders, when does a wetland become something else by definition? For example, is there an extended period of drought and wetland dries up absent of any human manipulation, without any human manipulation? Is the land recategorized? In a nutshell, what are the legitimate reasons or markers for recategorizing what has been a wetland?
Interesting question. Well, to answer that question, first I'm going to sort of rewind and talk about how the regulators define wetlands. You know, we at Wetlands Association like to say wetlands are the places between the always dry places and the always wet places. And then the regulators, of course, have to get a little bit more specific than that. And so they look for three factors. The presence of soil types that develop under wet conditions, because the soils are very different if they've developed under those conditions. Plants that are adapted to live in wet conditions. And the presence of water at or near the surface of the ground for all or part of a year. So wetlands are very dynamic, right? There's a lot of flexibility in that. And so when there's a, you know, the mapping is mostly done based on the soils because those are the things that are the most constant, right? Plants are a little bit more variable. And water, certainly, as you point out, there's dry years and wet years. So that can be a little more variable. But the soils are more steady. So that's generally the sort of starting place when you're mapping out where wetlands are. And when you need to get a permit for something, for some activity that will require a wetland delineation, somebody will come out and look for the soils and the water and the plants. And if you're there at a time of year where the water's not there, because it might be September and maybe that's when it's a dry time of year in that particular area, they could still see the soil and they can still see the plants. And that is when you would determine if there was a change. But usually it's something pretty fundamental has got to have changed because most of that stuff doesn't change very rapidly. The change is on a bigger order of magnitude in terms of time scale than I think we would see in our lifetime. But that's sort of a blink of the process that would happen in order to redesignate an area.
And he was talking about the sort of natural occurrences. Jeff in Delafield had also wondered about drain tiles, use of drain tiles in agricultural fields, how is that impacting wetlands? And mentions he's also grateful for the work of the Wetlands Association.
Oh, well, first, thank you, Jeff. That's very lovely of you to say. We are grateful and hope you're a member. And so getting back to his question about drain tile is one of the biggest ways that some kinds of wetlands have been drained. Those sedge meadows are in some of the most common types that were drained in this way. They were the easiest to drain for when we wanted more land for agriculture. So often the drain tile was, in fact, put into areas that would have been wetlands and then were subsequently able to be cropped because the water was being moved off. So the fundamental impact is right away, right? That's not a wetland anymore and you're farming it. And the good news is that the drain tiles in many cases can be removed, and with other work, those areas can be restored to wetland if that's in the landowner's in interest, if that's their goal. The other impact I will say from drain tiles is that it takes that water that would have sort of percolated down into the ground across a large extent of that field, concentrates it in these little pipes, and dumps it somewhere into a stream down slope. And that, so you're taking water that would have been spread out over a large area and putting it in a very small pipe and then dumping it somewhere. And so it makes the water go into the stream a lot faster than it would have normally. And it brings with it whatever it runs into, whether that's chemicals or soil or whatever else. So a lot of times we see nitrogen challenges in streams where there's a lot of drain tile. And I'm not pointing a finger of blame at agriculture. It's just the way that we use, that's what happens, right? It's the water gets concentrated. And there are ways that we can manage that challenge that involve creating some buffers or restoring wetlands in strategic locations.
And the drain tiles have been removed.
Yeah.
Yep. In Wisconsin.
Yes, they have in many places. In fact, I talked with one landowner up near Two Rivers, actually, who had removed 5 layers of drain tile from his land. So vertically, right, there were 5 layers. And the oldest one, it took me a while to get my brain around, the oldest one was at the top, closest to the surface, And the newest one was at the bottom. And I was like, how does that? But you think about it, you drain a little bit and then some water, you need to get more effective, you put it lower. And then you need to get more effective, you put it lower. Because sometimes when you drain these hydric soils, they start to decompose. And so that the soil volume actually reduces as it breaks down and the surface can sink. And so he had five layers of tile that he had to pull out. And the top ones, the oldest ones, you had fingerprints in the clay tile because they were handmade. Somebody had made them and like stuck them on top of their wood stove to dry them out, right? Amazing amount of effort to drain these wetlands.
And good to have it back into its
absolutely
natural condition.
Yep.
Nelson, I want to go back to you for just a minute. What do you hope conference attendees will take away from your presentation?
Well, I think a lot of things that are at least a theme that we've been focusing on with some even writings in the newsletter for the WWA this past year is fully understanding the connections between wetlands, for example, and other aspects of the landscape. And the really cool thing about working with wetland scientists is they have just as much of a passion for understanding Wisconsin's landscapes as someone like me, who's a glacial geologist. And so it's always the case when I work with them or I talk with them that they are simply like a sponge wanting to know as much as they can about the glacial geology. And the reverse for me is I think the kind of work that they do is really informative in the opposite direction. And so it's the connection that I think we're gonna focus on.
Oh, that's really cool. And Katie, back to you again for the conference. I do want to get a little reminder about what's going on there again and when.
Yep. So the conference is February 20th to 22nd in Green Bay at the Oneida Hotel and Convention Center. And you can find out all the information at conference.wisconsinwetlands.org, including a link to registration. I wanted to shout out again that the Tuesday, February 20th, there's an opportunity to attend the Wisconsin Wetlands Association annual membership meeting. You don't need to be a member to attend. We invite everybody. It's free and open to the public, also at that same Oneida Hotel and Convention Center. And you can learn more about that on our website, wisconsinwetlands.org.
And Nelson is speaking when?
Wednesday morning.
Wednesday morning.
February 21st.
Wednesday morning.
That's right.
Bright and early Wednesday morning. What time, actually?
That's a good question. I think it's 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock. Well, don't be late, Nelson.
He's going to come party the night before. Who knows? Yeah. He lives in the area, so it's easy for him.
Listen, thanks so much. To both of you today. You know, the conference is always great. I know your talk, Nelson, is going to be super. You probably have a few visuals to go along with it.
A lot of visuals. I'm going to focus a lot on the landforms in terms of what we've learned in the past 40 years of really detailed glacial geology mapping and also new techniques for measuring the shape of the Earth's surface, laser techniques that have supplanted the old topographic maps.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you again both very much for being with us. Katie Belfus is the Outreach Program Director at the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, and Nelson Hamm is Professor of Geology and Environmental Science at St. Norbert College in De Pere, and presenting at this year's conference. It's always great to have Katie come by. Nelson, it was great to have him with us as well, and great to have you listening in. And let me tell you, tomorrow on the show, we've got some representatives from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. We always talk about consumer complaints, and you'll have a chance to call in if you've got a question or a comment or an experience, and they will be telling us their top 10 complaints that they received this past year. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Kneeler.